dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as a tour of the battle space of the war for the free world, one of the most important fronts of which at the moment is Syria. And we are pleased to be joined by a senator who is very much engaged in the debate about whether it is advisable, as President Obama has called for the United States to become embroiled in that civil war by weighing in with a punitive attack aimed at responding to the use, alleged use, I should say, of chemical weapons by Bashar Assad regime. He is Senator Ron Johnson. He is a United States Senator from Wisconsin, a member of several important committees, most notably at the moment, the Foreign Relations Committee. And Senator, welcome. It's great to have a chance to visit with you about your conversations with the President's National Security Team yesterday in the hearing before your committee. Thank you for joining us.
Well, Frank, glad to be here.
Your takeaway from the representations that you received yesterday, and in particular your lines of questioning that I thought were very, very apt about both the nature of the people that might benefit from such an attack, the so-called rebels.
Well, in these hearings, all I do is just ask questions. I'm a plastic salesman from Oshkosh, Wisconsin. I mean, I'm new to the Foreign Relations Committee. I'm asking the questions that I think need to be asked before you commit American troops or American military might to a situation. And, you know, truthfully, Frank, it was a little shocking that the Secretary of Defense, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, didn't know basic numbers of the rebel troop strengths or the basic composition. You know, they just referred to, well, the CIA has that information. I mean, I'm being forced to take a vote on a resolution to commit military force, and that's the first question I'd be asking. You would think that the people that were contemplating this, that were planning this, would have all those numbers at the tips of their fingers. And the fact they don't have that information at the tips of their fingers really concerns me from a standpoint of information that is far more important. Like, is there any planning for what happens after we take what is probably very ineffective action? I mean, there might have been a moment to punish Assad for the use of chemical weapons against his own people, but I'm afraid that moment has passed. And so now you're going, well, really, what is the point of this? President Obama, right from the start, involved America by saying Assad must go. Okay, are you going to do anything about it? Are you going to assemble a coalition of the willing to make sure that happens? And the president basically did nothing for 2.5 years until he opened his mouth and created a red line. And now is this, you know, my concern is this engagement, this action would be, you know, really undertaken for the sole purpose of restoring his credibility, which I think he has none. There's nothing to restore.
You've touched on several really critical points here. Let me just go through them in turn, if I may. One, this, I call it sort of the Goldilocks attack strategy, that we'll be able so carefully to calibrate it that it'll be not too much, not too little, but just right, that it will have the desired effect and there will be no repercussions. I gather you find that unconvincing.
Yeah, I asked the same question, you know, tailored, how can you calibrate a military action to precisely do exactly what you want? You'll send that message, you know, the shot across the bow without having any spillover effects, not having very serious unintended consequences. I'm not convinced the military can do that. Actually, I'm quite convinced that they're simply not capable of it. Not to say our military isn't great, but I mean, I don't know how you start lobbing, you know, very destructive bombs into situation and realize and think that you can really control the repercussions of something like that.
Well, my reading of it, and I'd be interested in yours because you were there, was that the military wasn't so much making this argument as were the civilians. That General Dempsey, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, seemed to be very uncomfortable, actually, with a lot of the representations that were being made, seemingly indicating that they're not really quite clear what the plan is, particularly, as you say, Senator Ron Johnson, and the plan after the strike, whatever that is, takes place.
Well, I think in fairness to the military, I think most of the real answers need to be given to us in classified briefings, which will happen today. The hearing yesterday, whatever it was, three and a half hours, was primarily all the, I'd say justifiable bluster about our outrage, our indignation about, concerning the use of chemical weapons by Assad against his own people. It is a moral outrage. Okay, but so is the slaughter of 100,000 Syrian civilians. So is the 2 million refugees now spilling over into neighboring countries and destabilize those countries. All those things are outrageous, but we haven't done anything up until this point, and now we're going to respond to this one moral outrage. And again, I'm just not hearing a real convincing case of what is the long-term strategy, and have they done any planning for, once we take that action, to pick up the pieces and have some sort of follow through. What groups are we working with? What is the composition of the rebel forces? I really don't know. I'm not sure that they know.
Yeah, I don't think that you either. We're speaking again with Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. You described yourself as just a plastic salesman, sir, but what you bring to this is, I think, the common sense of the American people. And in particular, one of the things that I'm just completely flummoxed by is what they think are going to happen with the chemical stockpiles of the Assad regime if either of two things happen. One is that, as Bill was speculating about with Bing West and me a short while ago, the Syrian regime turns them over to Hezbollah on the one hand, or a better case, I guess, from the administration's point of view, the opposition takes over, in which case they might wind up in the hands of, as you've indicated, at best maybe the Muslim Brotherhood and at worst Al-Qaeda. You're on the Homeland Security Committee as well as the Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Johnson. What are the implications of either of those outcomes?
Well, to me, that is the national security interest involved in Syria. It's one we should have been talking about for the last 2.5 years, developing that coalition of the willing, trying to get control of that, honestly trying to work with Russia. Now, I don't think it's in Russia's best interest that those chemical weapons fall into the hands of a terrorist group. I think that's probably one of the reasons Russia might be backing Assad. I mean, I have no idea why Russia's backing Assad, other than just poking a stick in America's eye. They're unfortunately, they're not a friendly competitor. They're becoming a more and more aggressive adversary of America. But, I actually asked the question, is there a possibility that Assad could, or has he already turned those chemical weapons over to Hezbollah? And the flummoxed look I got from particularly the Secretary of Defense was kind of spoke volumes, like he never even thought about that. Or maybe he knew something he wasn't willing to tell us in the open hearing. I have no idea. But to me, those are the types of things you really need to be concerned about. I mean, if I were Assad, that might be certainly one reaction to a strike by America is, okay, you guys are doing this to me, this is what I'll do to you. And we need to think those things through very carefully.
You bet. Senator Johnson, one other issue, and you've touched on it a moment ago, I must say, I find it unbelievable that the Senate Foreign Relations Committee could conceivably have a vote on this resolution with no outside witnesses, really no serious conversation about this beyond the administration's, proponents testifying on its behalf. One particularly troubling thing is we had just yesterday Rush Limbaugh, among others, picking up on a report by a former congressional staffer by the name of Yousef Badansky to the effect that a U.S. ambassador to Syria was in the company of rebels in Turkey shortly before the attack that took place on the 21st of August and was being told there was about to be a war-changing event that would bring the United States in on the side of the rebels. I just wonder, again, in light of the fact that some of these chemical weapons might have migrated into other hands, do you think we're doing due diligence even to understand the authority of this claim that the administration has made that Assad was responsible for this attack? At the very least, it seems to me that question ought to be sorted, don't you think?
I believe so, and from my standpoint, I'm not going to be allowed to do the time to do the due diligence that I think is necessary for me to make an informed decision if we're going to try and jam through a vote today or even this week. There is no reason whatsoever for Foreign Relations Committee to be voting on this resolution today or this week. I understand the need for speed here in terms of Congress acting on this next week, but we're only going to have our classified briefing today. And I've maybe got about 5% of my questions answered. That's 95% to go. And it's going to take quite some time. And then once I have the questions answered, this is a pretty important decision. this is something you need to kind of think about a little bit, you know, particularly when you're brought into this process pretty late. So I certainly hope they don't try and jam this vote through here today or this week.
Well, I hope that your voice will be heard, Senator, as it was yesterday, loud and clear, and we appreciate you spending some time with us talking about it as well, and that you'll come back. This is, in fact, I believe, a formula for a war, and the United States may well be embroiled in it in a very, very dangerous way, and we, at the very minimum, need to have your questions answered and the public's right to know fully informed. Keep up the good work. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, come back to us if you will soon, sir. Next up, a take on all of this from former Assistant Secretary of Defense and U.S. Marine, Bing West. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
If you don't know where Bill Bennett stands, here are some of his beliefs.
I believe Americans should largely do much more for themselves than many Americans are doing.
But do I rule out government as something that might be able to assist in that? And that I do not.
I do think families, churches, and schools are better places for that to happen. People should do for themselves what they can. Government should do what people cannot do for themselves.
Get to know Bill Bennett, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by a man that I have admired and had the privilege of working with many years ago now. His name is Bing West, one of our country's foremost thinkers about and certainly authors concerning matters involving national security and particularly the business of war, the real horrific nature of it, how one gets into it, how one must wage it to be successful, and the downsides of getting it wrong. He is the author most recently of Into the Fire, and he is with us to talk a bit about what we've just been visiting with Senator Ron Johnson about, namely the Syrian caper, what President Obama has in mind and where this might lead. Bing West, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, Frank.
I had the privilege of hearing you and then interacting a bit with you on Bill Bennett's show earlier today, and wanted to sort of visit with you about a very important point you made, which I feel hasn't been properly articulated by most in this debate so far, and that is, this is unlikely to remain a surgical, very carefully calibrated, limited strike. Talk to us about what you think happens if the United States, in fact, goes forward with this planned attack.
Well, as I understand it, we're thinking of launching at least 150 cruise missiles. At that point, you've gone to war. You're hoping that this war will be completely one-sided, that you will strike the other side, that you will kill, I don't know, 500 or 1,000 people. You do a couple of billion dollars worth of damage, and then you will leave, and that's the end of it. Well, maybe, but if you're a Putin, if you're the Iranian leaders, if you're Assad, you know we're coming, and you have to look at what your options are, and it's incumbent upon anyone going to war to think through move, counter-move, move again, etc.
It is definitely a multi-move exercise. Bing West, we're going to come back to talk a bit about some of those moves and what the implications of them might be if it turns out it's not simply what I call the Goldilocks strike. We're talking with Bing West, a former Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration, a man I had the privilege of serving in the Pentagon with and have admired greatly ever since. And Bing, you were making the very, I think, commonsensical point that there are likely to be moves and counter moves in this business. What kinds of steps might you anticipate enemies of the United States would take in the expectation of, or at least in response to, the sort of surgical strike President Obama has in mind?
Well, let me give you just one example that worries me. Supposing Assad decides to really cause us problems, and he simply announces after we strike that he has dispersed his chemical weapons and that Hezbollah now has custody of some of his chemical weapons. Well, at that particular point, you have widened the war dramatically because Israel is not going to tolerate that. And Hezbollah is in Lebanon. So you've now greatly complicated the situation, and you don't know whether Assad is telling the truth or not. So if you're in, you're in. You don't go just to strike and then say you're changing the calculus of Assad, which is what now President General Dempsey says that he's been ordered to do, to change the calculus of the Assad regime. Well, holy cow, we don't know how to change calculus, and it may change in a way that would stun us. So if you're going to go to war, go to war. Get rid of the Assad regime. But then you have to ask who takes over after that. So you're really in it. It's not going to stop with just one attack.
I think that's right. Bing, let me address several of the points you just made. One is, best case, as best I can tell, the proponents of this strike envision the beneficiaries being the so-called rebels. And I just wonder whether anyone seems to, your way of thinking, have addressed satisfactorily the proposition that among the people who would inherit this stockpile of chemical weapons from Assad, if the rebels actually prevail, would be the Muslim Brotherhood at best and al-Qaeda at worst. What does that mean in terms of our national security?
Well, I don't think we thought it through. In yesterday, you could see that in the testimony by Secretary Kerry that he was getting nervous about that as he began, it seemed to me, for the first time to begin to think of it himself when he said, well, no, we're not going to have boots on the ground. And he said, well, we might have boots on the ground in order to get those chemical weapons. And then he began to trip over it. So the fact is that we just don't know.
General Dempsey, of course, I was talking about this with Senator Johnson a short while ago, had, it seemed to me, considerable discomfort in much of this hearing. As you said, he's being asked to calibrate or to affect the calculus of an individual. How, as a former Marine and military man and longtime observer and analyst of these things, how does that work, Bing? Is that, practically speaking, the way these strikes generally operate, or is that really the kind of delusional approach that folks who haven't had much experience with war might engage in?
Well, if you're told to change the calculus of your enemy, there's one way that, as a Marine, that I immediately do. I'd say, yes, sir, and I would strike at the brain stem and kill the person, and then I change his calculus. Except for killing Assad, unless you're some sort of brilliant psychiatrist, to get inside a pathological mind and change that while leaving him alive, you have to have some wonderful chemicals yourself.
Well, and that's really an interesting point, Bing. We serve back in a time when I think the idea of having a retaliatory capability in kind was something that President Reagan felt rather strongly about. You may remember there was a great tussle about modernizing our chemical arsenal during that period we served in the Pentagon. We've subsequently abandoned our chemical deterrent. We've subsequently embraced this idea that there's now an international norm, and we've gone even further now under this administration to assume responsibility, perhaps uniquely in the world, to go enforcing that norm. I'm really struck by the lack of serious thought that seems to have been applied to this, and Senator Johnson was saying earlier, the idea that they're being, pressed to vote on this resolution to authorize the use of force under these circumstances, immediately, with very little serious debate. What do you make of that?
We spent 30 or 40 years developing a different theories, strategic theories about the use of nuclear or chemical weapons, exchanging these theories with the Russians. We had people like Herman Kahn, et cetera, who were famous for trying to think through the entire logic train of using one weapon, another weapon, et cetera. And sometimes we got into dead ends, et cetera. But at least there was a serious effort to think how these weapons would be used, and there's been none of that now, Frank. I mean, you're quite right. Not only did the president say that we were going to strike at Syria, he basically said that any use of a chemical weapon anywhere in the world, and it seems only we, are going to enforce this new regime that he made up without anyone sort of saying, stop, let's think this thing through. Under President Reagan, when Iran and Iraq used hundreds of chemical weapons when you and I were in the administration, President Reagan, none of us ever said, well, let's have a new doctrine that the United States of America is going to take care of any use of chemical weapons anywhere in the world. We never thought in those terms. Suddenly we have this brand new doctrine that hasn't been thought through, and people are just blindly accepting it.
And we may well wind up paying a very high price in either the direct consequences or the indirect consequences. Bing, I've got to let you go. We're out of time, but please come back to us again very soon. This debate, I hope, will continue, and we need your counsel in its course, needless to say. Keep up the good work, my friend. We'll talk with you very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Mark Thiessen.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hugh Hewitt keeps the Constitution first.
That's what the left is about right now. Not about this or that.
Regulation or restriction.
Not about keeping weapons out of the hands of the mentally disabled. It's about attacking the Constitution. And by the way, you cannot mess with the Second Amendment without messing with the First and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Tenth. You either respect the Constitution or you don't.
The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weeknights at 6 after Michael Medved at 3 on 1260 WRC. New Choice. Intelligent Talk.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. President Obama's national security team went to Capitol Hill yesterday and proceeded to insult our intelligence. For example, Secretary of State John Kerry rebuked Senator Rand Paul for calling Mr. Obama's plan for attacking Syria a prescription for a wider war. Kerry insisted it will be nothing more than a carefully orchestrated and very limited strike. Never mind that the enemy has a say in whether it results in a war or not. Meanwhile, the war's leading congressional cheerleader, Senator John McCain, criticized Fox News for being troubled about allying with Syrian rebels who shouted Allahu Akbar after shooting down a Syrian jet. McCain insisted, "They are just like Christians, thanking God, and guaranteed moderates. Jihadists are not like Christians, and helping them conquer Syria is a formula for more war." This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish uncovers the dark side of revolution in the Middle East and the reason why Muslim countries are unable to dig themselves out of a cycle of revolution, political unrest, and tyranny. The constitutions of many Muslim countries state that Sharia law supersedes all other law, and that is why it has failed in providing a legal and political system where healthy democracy can flourish. In this dynamic, only tyrannical governments can survive. In The Devil We Don't Know, human rights activist and Center for Security Policy fellow Noni Darwish answers the tough questions. Why the Arab Spring won't usher in freedom and democracy or a feminist movement, and how Israel will be threatened by the new wave of Islamism after the so-called Arab Spring. The Devil We Don't Know by Noni Darwish. It's available at Amazon.com.
An inspector general serves as an independent watchdog in each federal agency, promoting integrity and efficiency while rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse of authority in our government. Several important U.S. agencies have not had an IG for years, including the State Department, which has been without an IG for 5 years. During a constant wave of scandals in Washington, D.C., the newly published IG handbook couldn't be more timely. Every IG takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. By exposing fraud, waste, or abuse through audits, IGs satisfy the constitutional mandate that a regular statement and account of the receipts and expenditures of all public money shall be published from time to time. The new IG handbook explains by what authority and for what purpose an inspector general does what he or she does on behalf of we, the people. Find the Inspector General Handbook by yours truly, Joseph E. Schmitz, on Amazon.com.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
We're back joined by Mark Thiessen. He is one of the most astute observers of the kinds of national security policymaking that is going on in Washington at the moment, if one can dignify it with that term, having served with considerable effect in a variety of capacities in the government, including in the offices of the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, in the White House under President George W. Bush, speech writing for both of them, on the staff of Senator Jesse Helms in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He is currently with the American Enterprise Institute and the author of a marvelous book, Courting Disaster, How the CIA Kept America Safe, and How Barack Obama is Inviting the next attack. Well, speaking of the next attack, Mark, we've been talking in the course of the program about something I know you've been thinking about and writing about, including in your Washington Post column recently, an attack by this country against Syria. Tell us your thoughts on the advisability of that attack and what it might lead to.
Well, there's two issues. There's the advisability of doing something, which I think is advisable, and there's the advisability of doing what Barack Obama is planning to do, which I think is inadvisable, if that makes sense. I mean, if you think about it, in the Libya war, the Libyan war gave rise to the Obama doctrine of leading from behind, right? And here we are in Syria, and we actually have a new Obama doctrine, which is an attack, and this is a quote from a U.S. official, just muscular enough not to be mocked, end quote. That's literally how they've described it. Obama has said it's going to be a shot across the bow. Well, one, a shot across the bow doesn't actually hit anything. So you know, and two, it's supposed to be a warning shot of a much more devastating response to follow if the person doesn't change their behavior. But Obama's already said that there's not going to be any more devastating response, that he doesn't want to get dragged into a broader war in Syria, and that he's war weary and the country's war weary. So a shot across the bow doesn't work if you've already said this is all that's going to come. So what we're doing here is we're actually taking a step back from the doctrine of leading from behind in Libya, where we actually deposed the dictator. I mean, they did it grudgingly, and we did it with France and Britain leading as opposed to us leading. But at least the dictator was overthrown. Here, the Obama administration has actually said that we are going to just blow some stuff up, and that our objective is explicitly not to change the balance of power on the ground. If your objective is to not change the balance of power on the ground, you don't use military force.
Right.
So I worry that our credibility will not be enhanced. Our credibility is on the line, because there was a line drawn in the sand, you will not cross this on the use of WMD. If we don't enforce that line in the sand, the red line, then we're in trouble and our credibility is hurt. But it's not going to be enhanced or restored by a feckless symbolic strike on Syria.
What would you do, Mark? You have served, as I say, as a senior advisor to cabinet-level officers and presidents. What would you recommend the Obama administration be doing, and the Congress as well, for that matter?
I would employ the Reagan Doctrine. I mean, if you think about this back in the, and you're familiar with the Reagan Doctrine from your work in the Reagan administration.
I am.
I mean, if you remember when you were in the Reagan administration, America was war-weary too after Vietnam. No one had any stomach for putting boots on the ground, but we had to confront Soviet expansionism. So what we did was we found the freedom fighters around the world who wanted to fight their own wars of liberation, and we helped them. And so in Syria, you have the Free Syrian Army, which is a secular pro-Western elements of the opposition. And then you have two different Al-Qaeda-backed groups, and they control distinct territory. They're separate in many ways. And you've got the Assad regime, which is an ally of Iran and Hezbollah, right? So the elimination of the Assad regime would be a blow to Iran, which is our number one geostrategic enemy right now in the world. And you have the alternatives are an Al-Qaeda-backed government and the Free Syrian Army coming to power. So we got to choose, right? So what I would do is I think there should be military action. I think there should be airstrikes to punish Assad, but it should be a coordinated effort in which we attack the Assad regime while giving money, intelligence, training, and weapons to the Free Syrian Army to marginalize Al-Qaeda, to make sure that they don't gain power, and to help ensure that the regime that replaces Assad is going to be better than Assad's. And quite frankly, let's hit, you know, we're going to be bombing Syria. Let's hit Al-Qaeda too. You know, they're in distinct territory. You know, we bombed them in Libya. I mean, we bombed them in Yemen. We bombed them in Pakistan. We bombed them in East Africa. Why not bomb them in Syria too?
Mark Thiessen is our guest. He is currently with the American Enterprise Institute, a columnist with the Washington Post and author of Courting Disaster. Mark, how confident are you in your assessment of the Free Syrian Army, both its character and its control of territory and its size? I heard John Kerry responding to a question on the part of members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, whose staff you served, to the effect that the momentum has shifted and we're now looking at really a secular and pro-democratic opposition that is coming to the fore. Is that your understanding? And if so, how likely is it to achieve that result, do you think?
We got to put this in context, okay? So, I don't necessarily think the Free Syrian Army is the modern equivalent of George Washington. But at the same time, neither were the Nicaraguan Contras, neither were the UNITA rebels in Angola, neither were even the best elements of the Mujahideen in Afghanistan that we supported, like the Northern Alliance. You're not looking to establish a Jeffersonian democracy. What you're looking at is to try and make sure that the government that replaces Assad is one that doesn't wake up in the morning every day and say America is the problem, it is the source of all the problems in the world and we have to destroy them. So the Free Syrian Army, I get my assessment of the Free Syrian Army based on the work of Kimberly Kagan and Elizabeth Obagi at the Institute for the Understanding of War, she and Elizabeth, in fact, has gone and spent a lot of time in Syria traveling with the Free Syrian Army. She knows the military commanders there. There's a very good analysis of who the players are, who the structures are that your readers can look for at their website. So I take them at their word. These are the people who helped design the surge and who in Anbar province in Iraq, and they know their stuff. So I take them at their word that the Free Syrian Army is capable and that they don't wake up in the morning thinking we're the problems of the world. Whereas I know that Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which is one of the two Al-Qaeda groups in Syria, does wake up in the morning with that attitude.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, and I want to come back to the Institute of the Study of War piece of this, because there have been some interesting questions raised about that. But first thing with the general proposition, where do you come down, Mark Thiessen, on one of the other elements in all of this, which is the Muslim Brotherhood? They are, I believe, a group that also wakes up every morning thinking America is the source of the problems in the world because it's impeding the arrival of Sharia. Are they a team that we should be playing with? Do you regard them, as John McCain seems to think, as moderates with whom we can do business?
I do not. And also, keep this in mind. I mean, look at what this is going to a different country, but Egypt, okay? Here we had a situation in Egypt where the largest protest in the history of that country, bigger than the protest against the Mubarak regime, and they were protesting against the Muslim Brotherhood. And what did we do? We sided with the Muslim Brotherhood, the Obama administration. It's unbelievable. This administration doesn't seem to grasp that we are not just engaged in a military conflict they even have trouble seeing it as military conflict. They'd like to see it as law enforcement, but to the extent they accept it's a military conflict, they don't seem to accept or understand this is an ideological conflict as well. And when millions of people take to Tahrir Square to protest against the Muslim Brotherhood, and we stand with the Muslim Brotherhood, we've just taken, we've given the Muslim Brotherhood an ideological victory, which should have been a defeat for them. So, yeah, absolutely. I'm for the coup d'etat in Egypt. I'm for overthrowing the Muslim Brotherhood. We should have been standing with the people there, and we've alienated the people twice now because we stood with Mubarak first, and now we stood with the Muslim Brotherhood.
Right. It is a troubling relationship, to say the least, whether it's being promoted by President Obama and his team or by John McCain or for that matter, any others. And if the alternative truly is a Syrian opposition that is secular and is seeking, however imperfect, a democratic approach that respects the rights of minorities and the like, you know, there might be a horse we could back. I must say I am somewhat concerned, though, Mark Thiessen, about that. And I'd like to visit with you further about Elizabeth's assessment, and we indeed hope to have her on as well to talk about it. One question is, to what extent might her assessment be influenced by the fact that she seems to be working with some of these Syrian opposition forces at the moment? I will talk about that on another occasion, but in the meantime, I thank you for joining us, Mark, with your insights in all of this, and especially your warnings about the inadvisability of a feckless strike in Syria.
Thank you, Frank.
We'll talk with you again very soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Adam Credo of the Washington Free Beacon. We'll get his reading on what the Iranians and Hezbollah and others may do in response. Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
There's a reason Bill Bennett doesn't go after people that disagree with him.
I don't think you persuade people when you yell at them,
when you make fun of them,
when you wave your finger and scold them. I don't think you turn anybody around.
And I think the reason that you try to adopt the Socratic maxims of candor, intelligence, and goodwill is because people can change their minds.
They're not going to change their minds if you call them idiots.
I just don't think so.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America. Weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
This is Frank Gaffney. Something is seriously wrong when the FBI interviews a jihadist like Tamerlan Tsarnaev, the older of the two Chechens believed to have perpetrated the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and sees no evil. Yet, that is the predictable result of the shackling of the Bureau that has taken place in recent years. For example, in 2011, the Obama administration actually purged FBI training materials of information that warns of the connection between the Tsarnaev's kind of religious fervor and terrifying acts of jihad. And Team Obama has also effectively told the Bureau it must get the approval of Muslim Brotherhood operatives before it can do any such training in the future. This is a formula for much more jihad in America. It's time to free the FBI so that they can do their job and protect our country. If you agree, go to www.freethefbi.com. That's www.freethefbi.com.
Hey, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Michael Medved says stupidity in our federal government is a bipartisan issue.
This administration and the leadership of Barack Obama
and the leadership of some folks in the Republican Party
are both so stupid and just so inane and brain dead. Can you see some kind of bright side here?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
The Michael Medved Show.
You want to help me with this?
Afternoons from 3 to 6 on 1260 WRC. New choice. Intelligent talk.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined by Adam Credo. He is a senior writer for the Washington Free Beacon, a prize-winning journalist, particularly expert in matters involving national security and most especially the Middle East, and therefore one of the men we wanted to touch base with about the Syrian caper. What is coming up and what might come of it? We've been talking throughout the program, Adam, about some aspects of this, and I'm very anxious to get your take. Welcome back. It's good to have you with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
You've been reporting a bit about Hezbollah, this Iranian proxy that is a designated terrorist group, making very overt threats against Israel in the event that Syria, its ally, is attacked. President Obama has now said he intends to do. Give us a read on this, Adam, as we've been talking with some of our previous guests about the possibility that Hezbollah may, in fact, obtain from Assad chemical weapons. Is that possibly the stuff that would be at the front end of such a missile attack against Israel, and what might the implications of that be?
Well, look, it's certainly possible, and neither situation is terribly surprising, and that's because Hezbollah is, of course, controlled by Iran, and even the Ayatollah in Iran has threatened retaliation against Israel if the U.S. strikes Syria. Hezbollah, rather than chemical weapons immediately, they could certainly get their hands on them later, but it's more likely that they'll launch some sort of surface-to-air rockets at Israel from possibly even in Syria or their bases in Lebanon on Israel's northern border. And they could, of course, attack all sorts of towns and Haifa, which is in the north of the country, and several other very important areas to the Jewish state. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them get involved. Of course, they're already fighting the war on Assad's behalf in Syria, so they're already pretty involved in the conflict.
They are, and the possibilities of the conflict becoming considerably wider, of course, would go up considerably if, as you've indicated and Bing West suggested, we might find Hezbollah using Lebanon as a launching pad for such attacks. Israel is no slouch when it comes to defending itself against these sorts of threats. Would you anticipate that they would act preemptively in the event that they sense that that chemical capability or even simply this rocket attack would be the upshot of this? And again, what does that mean for a wider regional war?
Yeah, again, that wouldn't surprise me. Israel's signature move is to attack before being attacked, which is very smart when you're the state of Israel and you're about the size of New Jersey and you're surrounded by terrorist entities who hate you and want to kill your people and take your land. So that wouldn't necessarily shock me, but it could, of course, lead to a wider regional conflict as Iran gets involved, most likely through Hezbollah, its proxy, but could certainly get involved on a larger scale, launching terrorist operations, cyber operations, even. I've heard from some experts who I've spoken to about this. So it looks like the potential for this to expand past Syria into the greater Middle East and possibly further is increasingly likely should the U.S. attack.
Mm. One other thing before we leave Israel, Adam Credo, the Washington Free Beacon observes today that there was an Israeli missile defense test undertaken in cooperation with the U.S. Missile Defense Agency. Again, Israel is focused on both offensive capabilities against these sorts of threats, but also defensive. Does it suggest that we should be similarly paying more attention to and investing more resources in our own missile defense capabilities?
Oh, that's certainly something that we here in the U.S. have not put a priority on, but we should in Israel. They have the Iron Dome system. They're working on David Sling and other similar systems that protect them from rockets, from terror rockets and other sorts. And they've been proven effective, and they've been developed with the United States, but we don't use these systems as much domestically. And maybe if this conflict spirals out of control, we might think about putting them in place, because in Israel, they've been shockingly effective.
Well, and vitally necessary, needless to say. Adam Credo is our guest with the Washington Free Beacon. Adam, one of the things that you've also been writing about are developments from Iran. You mentioned that Hezbollah is an Iranian proxy. What has Iran itself been up to in the run-up to a possible U.S. strike in Syria?
Yeah, well, you know, Iran has really emerged as the wild card here, providing the Assad regime in Syria with not just diplomatic support, but also military support. They've sent fighters over there. They've sent highly skilled military officials over there to help train troops and other jihadists. And domestically, Iran is also making moves. They've unveiled new warships that have advanced radar system, advanced weapon systems. And these are the types of ships that they would put into the water to potentially go against the U.S. should there be a conflict that it chooses to get involved in militarily. And these are types of ships that have radar that can detect cruise missiles, for instance, and other weapons that would likely be employed from the West. And as they also unveil these military toys that they're putting into the water and elsewhere, they're also spinning centrifuges, enriching uranium quicker than they ever have in the past. They've installed about 1,000 new advanced centrifuges in their enrichment plan, and that looks like it can get them to a bomb, or at least what experts call a critical capability, by about mid-2014. So we're looking at that. In all of this with Syria happening, we're looking at Iran on the cusp of a nuclear weapon still.
Yeah, well, I can't conceive it takes until the middle of 2014. These guys have been, by many estimates, months, if not weeks, away from that capability for some time. And I'm frankly surprised that we haven't seen either a mushroom cloud someplace or at least a test. Perhaps we have through the North Koreans of an Iranian capability, but we'll keep following that closely, as will you, I know. Adam Credo. Adam, you also talked with a former Premier of Spain, once a very important ally of this country and a partner in a coalition of the willing, as I recall, in the past. Tell us what he told you about where the United States is at the moment with respect to this problem in Syria.
Absolutely. The former Spanish prime minister was a very strong and close ally of ours, and a man who made tough decisions and stood by them. And because he has this reputation, I asked him yesterday, he was here in D.C., I asked him about his thoughts on Syria, and he called the administration's back-and-forth decision-making, first hinting at a strike and then backing off of this. He called it a very bad decision. He said that while it appears more democratic, in his words, to seek congressional approval for a serious strike, this in fact makes the U.S. leader look weak. It makes him look like he's not willing to accept responsibility for the burden of his office and the burden of going at it. And he called this a very bad decision. It was quite serious in the terms he put it, and said that this causes confusion across the world, not just for our enemies, but more importantly for our allies.
Yeah. This is, again, former Spanish Prime Minister Jose Maria Aznar that you spoke with. Yeah. Adam, let me just ask you, you follow these things pretty closely on the Hill and elsewhere. What is your current reading of whether the president will successfully obtain congressional approval for strike on Syria of perhaps a rather open-ended character, even though there will be efforts made to limit it?
Yeah, well, I saw the testimony yesterday on the Hill from John Kerry and Chuck Hagel and our other top military brass, and it's still unclear to me if there is the will in Congress to actually do this. The way the vote is whipping up is starting to shape up. Doesn't look optimistic for the president winning, but the White House remains confident. They say that they will, in fact, get the votes by the time a vote comes around. So maybe we will see this, but all I see at this point is uncertainty, and uncertainty to me sends a very, very bad sign to all our allies and friends across the world.
Right. Well, uncertainty and a lot of popular opposition to it. I think the latest poll indicated it was something like 56% of those polled expressing opposition. So that may bear on these calculations by the Congress as well. We have to leave it at that. Adam Credo of the Washington Free Beacon, thank you as always for your insights and the good work you do there. Keep it up. We'll talk with you again very soon. We'll talk with the rest of you again, I hope, tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.